Hello, and welcome to the Astro City Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting Kurt Busiek's Astro City series. In this Astro City Spotlight, I'm joined by James, and we're going to be discussing Astro City, A Visitor's Guide from 2004. James, how are you doing tonight?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing, John?
I am doing well, and I want to start this with an apology.
Oh.
I hadn't read this since 2004.
Oh.
I'm thinking it's got profile pages. I mean, a regular 20-page issue or whatever of Astro City, or 24 pages usually. There's a lot of meat on the bone. It's 50 pages. This is going to be a lot. It wasn't.
Yeah, it was really not a lot.
And I think actually that was a smart move on Busiek's part. He billed this as a visitor's guide to the city, and I think it met that criteria. It introduced things. There was a short story at the beginning. There was a text piece that kind of talked about the different neighborhoods. There were, and I'm going to use the term, profile pages. And by profile pages, there's some good art, and then there's like at most a sentence or two, a paragraph or something on a character. And that was kind of sort of about it for this. I mean, there were some house ads, or not house ads, there were in-universe ads for various places we'd seen, and those were kind of cool, but meaningless.
Yeah, it felt like, if I could equate this to something, like Greg Rucka always did his Back Matter and Lazarus.
Mm-hmm.
His was way meatier than this, but this feels like it should have been Back Matter type material. It feels like it's compiled because it's like maps of the city and places to eat. Like we care about a place to eat, but
a map of the city,
a map. Yeah. Just to make it realized, but which is cool, but I'm like, are we really going to use this? No, not really.
Well, and I think the comparison to Rucka's stuff is a good one because some of the stuff like the ad for Astro Bank or Read It in the Rocket and things like that, those are things Rucka would have just tossed in the back of Lazarus as a, you know, I got a little space to fill kind of a thing.
Exactly.
But then you look at the source books Rucka did, and I mean, that's a fully realized world, and Astro City is too, but if you look at a source book and you look at this visitor's guide, you're going to think Astro City is just surface level, when it's not, but this visitor's guide is.
Yeah, one was fleshed out to be a role-playing game, and the other one was, I have some time on my hand, it felt like.
Yeah.
And this is something neat that somebody may enjoy.
Well, and it's something to keep the property out there to, you know, do a couple of memory jogs here and there, reuse some art here and there, and reuse it well. But it's on-ramp into the Astro City stuff, not a recap of the Astro City stuff.
Yeah, correct. That's a perfect way to put it. I was even interested with the little story that we did get in there with the people taking the trip to Astro City.
Well, it was the Astro City Extreme Tours.
Extreme Tours, yeah, to see. And they're looking at some damage left over by the, I can't remember the brain, the Silver Brain. I was just surprised they didn't pick anything more, I don't want to say meaningful, but one of the bigger, higher profile things for the Extreme Tour, because the Silver Brain is something that's just kind of out there. It's there, but it hasn't been a central focal point of any of the issues we've done.
Yeah, well, and it was, what, a 8-10-page story, if that?
Yeah, it was really small.
And it was fun, but the minute I saw the Extreme Tours, I'm like, that's the exact sort of thing I would not do in Astro City.
Yeah, you are not going to come out on the other side, probably, very well. And I loved how they had all the warnings, you know?
Well, you've got to sign away all liability and stuff like that. And when they say, do not touch something, they are not joking, because somebody on the tour does touch something, and, you know, that's kind of what happens.
Yeah, lo and behold, boom, boom, boom. It doesn't go well.
It was fun, but it was also, again, like Astro City typically is, when the superheroics start coming, they're not front and center, they kind of fly off, and that happens off, and you see kind of the ramifications of all of that.
Exactly, yeah, and that's the focal point of Marvel's, when he did that at Marvel,
mm-hmm.
And also Astro City. It's never the superheroics. It's the lives of the people who, if it happens to be a superhero, it's more the superhero's life than the action sequence or the cool story that happens that we see in a Marvel or DC tale.
Yeah, I would say the special we got with Supersonic probably dealt more with the superheroics front and center than most issues.
Yeah, I would agree with you there completely. Because like I said, even if we got a superhero that they were talking about previously, it was more about their personality and who they are as a person outside of wearing the cape or cowl, that they're just everyday life.
Yeah. Well, and I think we've learned a lot about these characters that is at best alluded to in this and not really addressed or recapped. And again, I don't know if I was, and I should have known better, if I was expecting a Who's Who or Marvel Universe handbook kind of a thing here. And this is absolutely not that. Didn't set out to be that, set out to exactly not be that, I think. And again, from a creative point of view, I think this was a cool thing for Busick to have done. I think not going the source book route, given the nature of the property, was absolutely the right choice. But it also, again, felt like a bit of a light read.
Yeah, it really did feel like a light read. And to your point about this was interesting material, but some of the characters for the character sheets that we did get, they were so obscure, I don't even remember seeing some of these characters to this point.
Such as?
I'm trying to remember off the top. I'm scrolling through.
That's how forgettable they were.
Yeah, like give me a minute, I'll find one. But there were some guys like, I don't remember this character.
Well, like we get the first family and it's, yep, there's the first family. This probably had the most writing with like a literally, I think, two sentences, three sentences.
Yeah.
No, two.
I think it was when we got to like the Golden Age stuff, like Air Ace. It's mentioned, but you don't see a ton of them. That basically all those characters who are at the very end, the patriotic group, like they happened, but they have not really been a focal point, mostly that I've seen.
Well, when they bring out the Flying Fox, she was in, what, the last page of one of the issues?
Exactly. There's a few characters like that where I'm like, I remember they exist, but they're so minuscule. Maybe he had something grander entailed for after this issue came out that maybe I'm going to focus on this character.
And Ares is a good example because I'm sure he was mentioned, but did we really...
I don't remember.
I don't think we saw him, and he certainly wasn't a featured character.
Yeah, and that was a lot with those Golden Age, they call the old soldier, you know, like mm-hmm. the All-American. I mean, they were like characters that were maybe mentioned or you saw a brief thing, but it's almost like that entire Golden Age section has not been fleshed out at this point. But they're there.
Well, like the All-American... When we had the one half issue where the guy had lost his wife in the crisis kind of a story.
Yeah.
When Hangman is telling him what happened, there was a brief thing with All-American and Slugger or whatever it is.
Yeah, Slugger. I can't remember. The baseball kid.
Yeah. But those two. And that's when the guy is like, what does this have to do with me? And Hangman's like, hang on, just pay attention. And it's like, okay, he was there for really a page or two at best, and we move on.
Exactly. I got to that, and I'm like, oh, I remember that guy, but I know nothing about this character. It's just, so you get to those things, I'm like, huh, I guess maybe this is going to be material for the future, but at this point, I don't know. I haven't read beyond this.
I think it's more a recap, not a recap, a
who's who.
Not even a who's who. It's absolutely not a who's who or official handbook of the Marvel Universe kind of a thing, but it's collecting characters that we have had mentioned before.
Yeah.
And I think what would be a fun twist on this would be an annotated version of this, where it actually said, like, for the All-American and stuff, here are the pages we saw them, it was in this issue, here's what's going on. So where in the story these characters were kind of touched on. But then also, I think All-American's a great example. This is Captain America and Bucky.
Exactly.
And it looks nothing, I mean, like them. I mean, it's got the red, white, and blue, the All-American name and aspect to it. So I love how he's taking iconic characters and going in some really different directions with them.
Yeah, he almost does something that's very clever. He is not ripping off the characters that we know, but he's heavily alluding to who's the inspiration behind this character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you look at this and you know that. And so... it almost creates a little bit of a shortcut that he doesn't really have to flesh this character out for me to kind of get the gist of what this character is going to be like. And I know it's not copy and paste because they're not the same and they're a little bit different. There's always some differences in there. But just knowing All-American, I look at the picture and I'm like, oh yeah, this is who that is. And exactly, Bucky and Cap. You kind of know who they are without knowing who they are, although he's going to have a twist.
But then you flip to the next page, you got the old soldier, and that's also Cap.
Exactly. So it's Cap different. Cap with the sword. So it's so weird. Because you feel like, this is Cap, this is Cap. Okay, what's going on?
You know, it's the number of different riffs he's got on certain archetypes is pretty impressive. And I think there's a lot to be said for, you know, something that would compare and contrast of, okay, these are all the same basic archetype, but look at the different directions he went in and what he was able to do with that.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll tell you what, this has been a fun time that we've had with this.
Mm-hmm.
I would say out of the stories that we've read at this point, the one that I like the best just personally is I like when he was dealing with the first family, the little girl. I can't remember her name.
Astra.
The life of me. Astra. Yeah. I just really enjoyed that story. It was a ton of fun. And that's one that stood out to me as like a highlight. I'm not saying it's the best, but it was the best for me.
Well, one of the things we'll get to after we go through the Dark Ages, there was a couple of one-shots and two-parters and stuff between those various books. One of them was Astra.
Oh, I really like her. And I like the entire first family, but I especially like her. I think she's a ton of fun. And it's nice to be reading in here when we get to it, the Fantastic Four, because as we've discussed in back issue spotlights previously, the Fantastic Four writer who was writing at the time.
More the monthly comic spotlight, we've talked about that. Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't really like writing the Fantastic Four. He likes the Fantastic One or Two.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's funny because Kurt Busiek is able to touch on Fantastic Four kinds of stories, Spider-Man types of stories, Captain America stories, Superman stories, you know, the JLA Avengers-ish sorts of stuff with the Honor Guard.
Yeah.
He can go in pretty much any direction he want and either pull out a character he's already established. And some of these were early in the first issue. He had kind of sprinkled out a bunch that we fleshed out later. But if he doesn't have one of a particular ilk, it's like, okay, here's the archetype. He'll put his spin on it. And it's great because Kurt's coming up with a character. Alex Ross has done, I think, a lot, if not most, of the character designs. And of course, Brent Anderson brings these characters and stories to life so well. It's fun to see something that is so evocative of the DC and Marvel universes without feeling so heavily derivative of them.
Yeah, exactly. It's not. And it feels like it's a nice thing for us to read because it's like a Marvel and DC universe crossover that we've had in the past, or an amalgam type thing, because the characters are just slightly different. And sometimes there are mishmashes of a couple characters. We've had that a few times where I'm like, oh, it kind of reminds me of this, but also this character. That he's almost created his amalgam thing. And I think if you're a Marvel or DC fan and you like to see those types of characters together, you can go to Astro City and sometimes they bump into each other, which is nice and different because we don't get that very often.
It would be cool to see like Samaritan and Winged Victory hanging out with the First Family.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he needs a little bit more of that because it all takes place right there. And hey, you're not bound by any type of agreement between the companies because these are your own characters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, having the big team up where let's get together and work together. I think that's the only thing that's missing a little bit because he could lean a little bit heavier on that. I think it'd be fun.
Yeah, I think that would be a ton of fun and definitely is something that we get a little of, but we don't get as much as I think we'd both enjoy.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, this is just kind of cool because it's so different, too, because superhero comics are good. They're fun. They're the mainstay. They're what keep our industry alive. Mm-hmm. Let's just say that, you know. But superhero comics are not always my personal favorite. You know, I've talked about Sword and Sandals and War books being my favorite. But I feel like here, it's a superhero story, but it's not.
Well, it's a superhero setting.
Yeah, setting. And you get slice of life. You get real characterization and different types of stories, and it's not always a superhero story, which I think is very nice. And that, like you said, it's a setting. It's the background. It's not the plot, or it's not the device.
Well, if you ever watched the Battlestar Galactica reboot that Ron Moore did, it looks like science fiction.
Yeah.
It reads like a World War II story.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and there are a lot of things that use the window dressing of one genre to tell a story of another genre. And it's a little bit of a mishmash sometimes, because this absolutely has the window dressing of superheroes all over it. But it's never about the grudge match between the hero and the villain, usually. There are a few places where we get a little of that. It's more about the stories that are happening just off-screen of your typical Marvel or DC kind of a book.
Yeah, the stuff off-screen, like either the person who's doing the cleanup or the person who took over the the mantle of this said character, because that character aged out, and how they became that person that took over the mantle because of just things that happened in their life in Astro City. They bumped into this person, they bumped into that person. Mm-hmm. This happened, maybe they were righted or wronged and felt a certain way, and boom, bang, now this person is a character, good or bad. And it's really kind of cool. I mean, I even loved how they had the lion. Is his name Leo?
Leo,
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, Leo, who owns the restaurant, and he was a kind of comedian almost at one point. Having a cartoon character that came to life is something so Hanna-Barbera, and yet it worked in Astro City.
Well, and there are a couple of other characters of that ilk that don't fit the regular mold of the superhero type stuff. We get Beauty, we get American Pixie, maybe it is, or something like that. We've got a few that are just, how did these come to be? And when they get their spotlights and stuff, that's when we find out, oh, this is how.
Yeah, that Leo story was really impactful, because I think right around the time I read that, I had just watched BoJack Horseman from Netflix, which I felt like BoJack was kind of like aping off this story in Astro City, because it's literally about a person who's dealing with fame. And that's what the story is about. It's nothing about superheroics. It's about dealing with fame and how fame can ultimately corrupt or damage your life if you're not careful. And I just love that.
Well, it took a supporting Captain Marvel Shazam character of Taki Tawny, did essentially the E! Hollywood True Story version of it that we would never have gotten at Marvel or DC for the most part.
Oh, you wouldn't.
Every once in a while, they'll go in that kind of a thing. They'll do a mini series of whatnot, and it doesn't work in those universes.
It doesn't. If you tell that story in that universe, I think you'll have readers that are upset, because that's not what they're there for.
No, they want the superhero action and adventure, and I'm one of those readers.
Yeah, more times than often, you want to see the slugfest. You want to see the JLA versus the whoever it is that they're fighting this month, or what kind of situation they're put into, and how can they find their way out or figure it out, the puzzle, to win. And that's not this. This is something just totally different. It's totally characterization.
Well, and the sad thing is, I think Astro City still falls into the category of a hidden gem.
I agree. Most people have not read it, I think.
I think most modern readers may not have been around when it came out, and certainly when it was in its heyday and stuff. And if you want something that is I'm going to use the term more realistic look at superheroes than Marvel or DC, without getting uber grim and gritty and depressing or whatnot, or deconstructive, that's what this is, because you've got a ex-con supervillain. He's trying to turn over a new leaf, but his options are a little limited. We see how that plays out.
You want to know what's kind of cool about Astro City? The very first time I picked up a copy of it, basically in a single issue, it was midway through Volume 3, and you and Drew had reviewed it on the Weekly Spotlight. And I just kind of was like driving, and you know how traffic happens. You go in and out of the episode, and I pick up, oh, this is good, okay. But I didn't detail listen to that episode, I remember. But I picked it up, added it to my order. When I got it, I just assumed superhero story. And, okay, this is shame on me. I'm like, oh, this kind of sucks. It's nothing. Well, I don't get it. You know, this isn't a superhero story, because I was going into it with a mindset of expecting the action, the normal things that you get from Marvel and DC. And it took me about two or three issues before I said, oh, this is not that. And I'm like really started to appreciate what it was. But when I first read it, I thought, and I hate to say that, but that was my opinion. I thought this stinks because I wasn't expecting what I got.
If you're expecting to see the First Family go duke it out with the equivalent of Namor or whomever, that's not what Astro City's about. So it's not going to give you what you expect out of the Marvel and DC stuff, just like they don't give you what we expect out of here of what are these characters really like and doing in their off time.
And I'm happy I stuck around, because it becomes more enjoyable the more you read it, I feel like, personally. And so I'm happy we're doing this deep dive going all the way back to the beginning, because I never read this stuff early on. I started in Volume 3.
Well, and I think the Visitor's Guide really does a good job of showing how much stuff has been created and fleshed out. Some characters much more than others, but even out of the dozen or two dozen or whatever profile pages we get and stuff, there's a number of characters they didn't even touch on.
Yeah.
And a number of plot points they didn't touch on.
Correct.
We didn't get anything on Steeljack, and he was the lead for, what, 7 issues or something?
Yeah, he had a long, long, long run. That was probably the longest arc of anything we've read.
Yeah.
And he's not even mentioned, like you said, which I thought was bizarre. I was like, wow.
But A Visitor's Guide would not have mentioned him.
True. Very true. Because of who he is.
Who he is and where he is on kind of the totem pole of society.
Exactly. This focused more on certain characters of certain ilk versus a guy who basically wasn't a good guy for most of the time and kind of reformed himself.
This sells Astro City, the city in the universe.
Yeah.
Whereas I think what I was more wanting, and certainly now and definitely originally, was it to sell Astro City, the comic book, and all the backstory of it.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. And that all being said, it's enjoyable for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's not very deep. And I think this is probably a period in the story, and this is just me guessing without knowing the dates of when these things came out, that there was a pause. And he had time to do some write-ups. He had some art pieces that were real easy from Brent Anderson.
Well, and other people.
And others. Okay. And they just kind of put something together while they were basically taking a break. And that, hey, we're going to have this 6-month pause or whatever. Let's throw this thing out there. And it generated some income for him, which was great.
Well, this came out about 2 months after the Supersonic special.
Okay.
And that was about 4 months since the Astro City Aerosmith flip book. And that was about 3 months after Local Heroes ended.
Really spaced out. Wow.
And then we don't get the Dark Ages starting for another 8 months.
Wow. Well, hey, he's not as bad as George R. R. Martin with A Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah.
We could say that. He's the worst.
Well, and it's interesting because we're roughly a third of the way through the series now.
Yeah.
We've had 37 installments before this. That includes the 1/2 issue and the 8-page installment in that 9/11 anthology. And that's a total of, I think, 861 story pages. There are currently, as we record this, 76 issues after this with another 1,857 story pages. And this is, of course, a 50-page one-shot. And so we're not exactly at the 1/3 point, but it's a fairly good spot for, I thought, a let's take a look back and whatnot.
I would agree.
And I mean, I loved the Confessor arc. I loved Jack in a Box the times we've seen him.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Steeljack went a little long, but we've gotten so many characters and seen the world through so many different lenses and perspectives. That in and of itself, I think, fleshes out this world a lot more than DC and Marvel typically get.
I would agree with you there. The one thing that we did get Samaritan, I think he was in the first issue that we read.
Yes.
Yeah, Samaritan was the first issue, and I know we have had Honor Guard. I know we've seen mm-hmm. them, and I know they've been in there, but I thought it was surprising to me that he hasn't had an arc that was really heavy Honor Guard-centric, just seeing as that's kind of like the Justice League, you know, and him being who he is. I thought he would have leaned heavier on that. So I think there's stuff to be told here, stuff to be seen here, and it's just so rich, this world. He just has so much that he could do he hasn't even tapped into.
We do get an arc later on with, I think it's Crackerjack and Quarrel, maybe.
Okay.
And that's kind of sort of, but not quite, like a Green Arrow, Black Canary of the Justice League. So we get a bit more of the Honor Guard there. But yeah, typically when we're seeing the Honor Guard, they're coming in, wrapping something up and flying off, and we're aware of them, but the story hasn't, like you said, focused on them.
Yeah, exactly. Even when we got like Winged Victory, you know, she's more like, I think she was eating chili dogs or something, you know, like eating with some people, and happens to pop up because she had to go do something and come back. Well, let me come back later and eat. It just, you see them as characters, not as the superheroes.
Well, I think the one time we saw them the most was in the Steeljack story, one of those issues.
Yeah, exactly. But it's surprising because most writers, I think, going into here would go to the ace lineup, the big names. And that's not really what he's doing. He's going for the ace story.
They go for the easy story, and he's going for the deeper story, yeah.
Yeah, he's going for the impactful character moments. And like I said, fame. And he used a Hanna-Barbera character, basically, to tell a story about how people handle being in the spotlight badly. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, and that was a very impactful story to me, too. I just loved it. And, you know, the things that he does and the things he focuses on are different than what most writers do.
Well, we've had at least 3 different issues focusing on the whole figuring out the secret identity thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very different issues.
Yeah, completely different. I also like how there is some black and white, but not everything is black and white. There's a lot of gray, whether it be Steeljack or and choices that have to be made. It's making people or characters real, which I appreciate because it makes me view them as a real person making a decision versus a, I'm wearing a this color, this cape, I'm always right, you know, that which is very 1950s.
Well, and I think it's also a key difference of the writing of this versus a lot of comics, of how many comics have we read, or dropped in many cases, that it's like, this isn't like a Captain America story, it's not a Fantastic Four story, it's being told with those characters, but it's not intrinsically about them.
Yeah.
Whereas Astro City, we are bouncing vantage points on a regular basis, but those vantage points become very particular. They've got a attitude, a background, and a perspective that sometimes is crystal clear, other times maybe not quite so much, but it allows us to see this same world of Astro City through, again, so many different lenses and stuff.
Yeah.
That it's a lot of fun because we see like Supersonic's view on retirement or whatnot versus Jack in the Box's view on his retirement and his legacy. And again, they're thematically got some similarities to the stories, but they're told from different vantage points in time against retirement and different lifestyles and so forth. Whereas, again, there's so many stories that I feel I've read the same high-level story with Batman, Moon Knight, Spider-Man, Nightwing. I mean, name any street-level hero, and they've probably told the same basic story at some point, you know?
Yeah, over and over, rinse, repeat.
And if they're telling it well, I don't mind.
Me too. Me too. That's a key point, because if it's told well, I don't mind, and it gives you kind of what you grew up with and makes you a little nostalgic and makes it fun to read. But this is something very different than that.
Well, and you look at how many characters have been our vantage point character over those 37 installments we've read so far.
Yeah.
And none of them have been caricatures.
Correct.
You know, correct. They've been realized characters. That's pretty impressive in and of itself.
Very impressive. I'm amazed what he built here and what he's done here. And I think it's a travesty that more people haven't read it.
Mm-hmm.
More people don't talk about it. And there's so much left to be told. Like, there's just characters that I want to know more about. You know, like, oh, who are the religious guys that wear the crosses?
Oh, the crossbreed.
The crossbreed, yeah, the crossbreed. You know, I want to read the origin of the crossbreed, which I know we may never get that story, but it's just so interesting how they came about to me just because of who they are in Astro City and what they are. I'm just like, this is so weird. I need to know more about them. But will we ever see them again? Yes. Will they ever be the main focus? I don't know. We'll see.
Well, there was one issue that we haven't gotten to yet that when I first read it, it really just clicked with me. And it wasn't even about the lead character, but it was about the part of the world they were establishing and shedding light on and stuff. And I'm like, that's cool.
Yeah. Which one is that?
I'll tell you when we get to it.
Oh, okay. Okay. Not there yet. All right.
I want to reread it and see if it still works for me the way it did back then.
Okay.
Because again, some of these things I'm reading 10, 20, 30 years later.
Okay, gotcha.
And I'm, in some cases, the same guy. In other cases, not so much.
Now, do you have a favorite character or story so far of what we've read in the first 37?
Out of the first 37, I got to say that the one-half issue with the whole everyman's take on Crisis or whatnot and his dilemma and stuff, that one was awesome.
Yeah, that was a good issue. And mine, I already kind of told you, was Astra as a character. I mm-hmm. really loved her. And for a story, I really liked The One with Fame with Leo the Lion. I just yeah. love that one, and I thought it was terrific. But at the same time, there's others that I've liked a heck of a lot. Those two were my two favorites, though.
As far as characters, I'd also have to give an honorable mention to Jack in the Box.
Oh, Jack in the Box is awesome. He's just so cool.
So, yeah, there's just a ton of good stuff here.
Yeah, it's so much fun, and it feels like a world that I feel a little bit sad for. And the reason why I feel a little bit sad for it is because we haven't received anything new recently. And so I'm hoping that Kurt and the other creators, Alex Ross and Brent, get together again and bring out some new Astro City comics, because this is a thing that needs to be published. It needs to have some life in it at least once a year, you know, something come out.
Well, I agree with that entirely. Again, we're 37 issues in. We're on the 38th installment and stuff out of 113.
Yeah.
And at this point, that's it.
Yeah, then it's gone.
So, well, in the
for now.
The most annoying part of that statement you just uttered was that last installment was the Astro City That Was Then special that teased or kicked off like a Teen Titans kind of a story.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, I really want to see how that plays out in Astro City's world. But that was 2+ years ago now.
Yeah. And Kurt's not a young man, so I hope they get back on it soon. That's us being a little selfish, but we've been blessed to have what we have, and I'm thankful for it. I hope we do get that big collected edition, and I hope we get some new stuff, because it's just fantastic. There's been one or two issues where I'm like, this one's okay, but even those aren't what I would say bad. They're just okay.
At its lowest point, it's still as good or better than most comics.
I would agree. Yeah. The ones that we didn't enjoy were still B-minus books, probably.
Well, and there were a couple that we really disliked the lead character, but it was a really effective job of getting us to dislike the lead character.
Exactly. I hate that one lady. Yeah, it's true. There was a few characters we really disliked, but that's a tip of the cap to him for making that character be despicable.
Yeah. So I'm impressed with what he's done. I hope he gets back to it. Again, I want to see what's going on with the teen characters and stuff, if they ever get around to it. And if not, I at least want them to fess up why it's not going to happen or why it's delayed or whatever. Just keep us in the loop.
Yeah, let us know.
Yeah.
Inquiring minds need to know.
Exactly.
But I'll tell you what, I've really enjoyed recording these and with you, because I think we have fun doing this too, along with our Warlord spotlights. These have been a lot of fun and it's been enjoyable.
The one thing I would like to see somebody do, and I think it needs to be somebody in the academic area, because I think they could do it properly, a book on Astro City that dives into and uses it to explore kind of the iconic archetypes and stuff of comics, how they've changed over the years, that sort of a thing.
Oh, yeah. That would be awesome.
I think this is the vehicle for that sort of a thing, and something that's well-researched by somebody who really understands comics as well. And that I think, narrows it down substantially as to who would be a fitting person to write such a book.
Yeah. I would pick it up.
Certainly could be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Now, we are going to get to the point after the Dark Ages where we every so often get some guest artists.
Okay.
But out of those 113 or so installments, there's only 14 issues that weren't done by Brent Anderson.
Wow. That's amazing. Brent Anderson, I know him from Astro City. Has he done much outside of Astro City?
He did some stuff for Strike Force Moratori back, I think, in the 90s.
Oh,
he did Spin World. He's done other things, some of it concurrently with Astro City.
Oh, wow. So he's prolific. Okay, he's been out there doing some stuff.
Yeah, he's very talented and seems to be able to handle whatever Kurt throws at him.
Yeah, and I was just looking him up. Yeah, his bibliography is pretty long. But these guys are not spring chickens. So Brent Anderson is currently 69 years old.
Wow, I hadn't realized he was that old.
Me neither. I was like, oh my gosh. All right, get him some glasses and get him writing and drawing before while we still have him with us.
Oh, he's been wearing glasses for ages. He was Southern Californian and in my neck of the woods when I was out there. I know of him, have met him a number of times. I wouldn't say we're buddies or anything. But yeah, I hope one of the delays getting more of it out isn't that he's having a hard time doing the art these days just as he gets older. I have no reason to think that would be the case other than it happens to all of us.
Yeah, he's 69 and Busick's a young 63. So they're definitely getting up there, but I think they have some life in them, some juice. And I hope that their health is in a, you know, that they're doing well enough that they can revisit this, because we've been blessed to have what we have, and I would love to see more.
I would like to see, again, that story they teased, and I would like to see something that serves as an end cap of sorts.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I mean, if you were to couch the story as in the mayor's retiring or something of that sort, you could give it to where it's like the city goes on, but this era is ended.
Now, quick question for you. This is completely off topic from Astro City that we're getting from those two creators, and Alex Ross doing the covers, of course. Alex Ross is the young guy of the group at 54. But if something happened to these guys where they just said, and I'm not saying something morbid like they died. I mean, we're all dying one day, but let's say they can't do it anymore. My eyesight's gone, my hands, I can't, you know, whatever. I can't do this. Would you like to see this continued? Is there anyone else that you could see doing it? Or is it really, it's been these guys who've created it. I don't, would you not trust it going to whoever, whatever writer, you know, to pick it up?
Well, we've had, again, 14 issues by different artists.
But not a different writer.
But not a different writer. And I think changing writers changes the reality.
I agree.
Not saying it couldn't be done, but that first installment would be kind of a make or break. Do they understand Astro City and what Kurt was doing with it? And if it's something where he hands it off to somebody versus somebody attempting to take it over, which I think, given the nature of a creator-owned property, is kind of a non-starter. I mean, it could happen, but I think as much as I want Brennan Anderson to keep doing it, could they get somebody else, like a Bruno Redondo or somebody, to get on it?
Oh, yeah.
That could work. You know, do I really like the Astro City covers by Alex Ross and his designs for the stuff? Absolutely. Are they mandatory? No.
No.
I think Kurt, because it's Kurt Busiek's Astro City and more than just title.
I would agree. Yeah, this is really Kurt Busiek's baby.
Now, if they get to the point where this can't happen anymore, it does leave the door open for somebody to do something akin to it. Not aping it, but I always thought Mark Waid should have done his superhero universe kind of like this with his spin on it. But, I mean, we're getting some of that over at DC with the real characters, so I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I agree. So I've enjoyed what we've read so far, and I'm looking forward to more. I'm hoping we get more. Fingers are crossed.
Yeah. Again, as long as we get that teen characters arc they promised us, essentially.
And an end cap. You'd be happy.
And an end cap. And they could do one in the same, but I do think an end cap special, I think, kind of makes sense. And then at that point, if it's like, yep, we're done, that's when you do a whole hog source book, who's who, official guide, you know, handbook to the universe, that kind of a thing at that point.
Yeah. And you know what? This got me thinking a little bit. We saw like a big omnibus type thing, you know, being solicited. Devil's advocate here, not really devil's advocate, but maybe just thinking ahead. If they were getting close to, hey, let's give you that last story and let's do an end cap. Let's split this thing up into two different big books and call it a day. And I think maybe they're just preparing for that final hurrah, maybe. And then we'll get it in all these different beautiful packages. You can buy it in a big book. You can buy it in trade paperbacks. Enjoy it however you would like to.
Could be. Don't know.
And I would be happy with that if that's what they were doing.
I would like to know what happened with the Opus edition that was sort of solicited, but not quite.
Yeah, we saw a picture. I saw it in there.
It was in previews, not in the Image catalog, and hadn't been mentioned since. So I don't know.
Somebody published by accident.
If anybody sees Kurt Busiek at a convention, or Brent Anderson, or even Alex Ross, ask about this stuff.
We really want to know.
So, anything else?
No, that does it for me.
Cool.
Recording clips for the Preview Spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the Preview Spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. The deadline is typically the second Saturday of the month at 9 a.m. Check the main page of the website for more information and the exact deadline for the next Preview Spotlight.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.